Okay, hey y'all, it's me, Dr. Sabina Rahman, Gyno Girl. We're here today in my office between two labia with another episode on this web series that I've been doing because we're right now sitting between the two labia that sit in my office. So I'm Dr. Sabina Rahman. I'm a sex med gynecologist. I'm a menopause expert in downtown Chicago and a member of the team that is here with me today. We are the GYN and Sexual Medicine Collective. We are a team together that works in the concierge world. I am the gynecologist. I'm going to introduce you to two of my other team members, and we work together to give patients elevated care. And so today we're going to talk about our practice, what's concierge care. We're going to have Karen talk a little bit about her other micro practice that she has in aesthetics. And we're going to have Grace do a little more deep dive into some pelvic floor therapy and what it's like to be a patient in our office. So let's get at it, everybody. Let's do it. All right. So Karen, why don't you start? Tell everyone like a little bit about yourself, your history, and what you do. And then Grace, introduce yourself, and then we'll talk about her practice.
Yes, I'm Karen. I am a board-certified family practice nurse practitioner. I've been with Dr. Rahman for about 7 years now. I have a strong nursing background in both women's health and plastic surgery. And I feel like our office allows me to incorporate the two areas that I'm most passionate about. I see a wide range of patients from, I feel like, as young as teenagers to... Yes. Men's life, you know, menopause.
So, and tell us a little bit about your micro practice, KB aesthetics.
So I started a aesthetic practice because I was seeing a lot of patients that were struggling with their hormones, and that was leading to acne and hyperpigmentation. And that's a big concern for a lot of women. Affects their self-esteem. And I wanted to learn a bit more and do more to help them. So I took additional training to learn about skincare and aesthetic treatments. And that branched off into me growing an aesthetic practice where now I also help women with their anti-aging and any sort of cosmetic concerns that are non-surgical, basically.
And tell us what your favorite peel is that you're doing in the office these days. She's supposed to do on
my favorite peel is called the VI peel. They have different variations of the peel depending on what your concerns are, whether it's acne, melasma, anti-aging. So they have a lot of different variations, and I like that. And then they're safe for all skin tones, which is important for me to be able to treat everyone, no matter their concerns.
Right. Because so many women with, you know, different skin tones are more pigmented, can actually get a pigmented response to
post-inflammatory hyperpigmentation. And that is what I'm trying to correct. So I don't want to cause any more issues. So I need to make sure that the products that I use are safe for everybody. That's very important.
Stay tuned. I'm starting next week, so I'll let you guys know. And I might bring my son in and do a light peel.
Yes.
A little teenager.
Oh, yeah. That's a teenage peel. Right?
Okay, and Grace, tell everyone about yourself.
Yeah, so hi, my name is Grace Preet. I'm a doctor of physical therapy. I've been practicing here with Dr. Rahman for about 4 years. I've been practicing altogether for about 5 years. And I started in orthopedics, and I still see a little bit of orthopedics here. And all pelvic floor cases have some, usually, generally have orthopedic considerations as well. In pelvic floor PT, I'm treating all sorts of ages. Like Karen mentioned, we're seeing all sorts of things like dyspareunia, pain with sex, vaginismus, vulvodynia, all primarily pain at the vulva and the vagina. And then, whether that's like superficial or deeper in the pelvis, pelvic floor dysfunction related to conditions like PCOS or endometriosis, as well as pelvic organ prolapse. And a lot of people with tense pelvic floors also suffer from urinary symptoms like urgency, leakage, and bowel concerns. We have patients right now with constipation and as well as like fecal incontinence sometimes. So it's a pretty wide range. I love treating the population here.
And we do a lot of fourth trimester care. So after that baby's out, most OBGYNs unfortunately don't have the capacity to really hone in on your recovery. But that's one thing that we like to do here in this practice.
Absolutely, yes. I love seeing fourth trimester. Looking at posture with lifting and holding baby during breastfeeding, as well as informing, you know, people that sometimes the vulva has some changes if you're breastfeeding, which can lead to, you know, increased time needed before like having sex or you know,
genitourinary syndrome, lactation is what we call it. And so that's very similar to genitourinary syndrome menopause, which we've talked about many times. Vaginal estrogen or DHA is exceptionally safe in this population, so we definitely use that with pelvic floor PT and help patients recover. And also, no one will think about the breastfeeding and how it affects your cervix. Your cervical spine. I mean, it's like, you know, you can get what we call a cervical radiculopathy from, you know, not posturing the right way. Right. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Something that comes a lot of the time with not only breastfeeding, belly tech neck, and just our life today where we're always on the phone is something called upper cross syndrome. In which, if you look at your body kind of like an X, the front of the X gets kind of long in the front of the neck, and the back gets really tight, and vice versa. The front of the pectorals get really tight, and the back of the body gets really weak and lengthened. So we're trying to correct all of those asymmetries and compensations, and, you know, education on how to feed baby with like a breast pillow or you know, a mirror in front of you so you don't have to look straight down. You can look at the baby in the mirror, things like that, and they all fall.
And that's,
yeah.
And of course, there's, you know, just like everything you talk about, biopsychosocial, there's all the psychological things that happen in the fourth trimester since we're talking about it. You know, there's postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, postpartum psychosis. These things get missed, unfortunately, because our medical system is set up to fail most patients and most clinicians. In a 10-minute visit, you can't assess if someone has postpartum depression, what their birth control needs are, if they're having sexual pain, and are they breastfeeding okay without just a yes or no, but that's it. Oh, I'm sorry, I can't do anything more for you. And that's how traditionally, you know, OBGYN practices have been, even though ACOG really is emphasizing that we should do more for the postpartum care. You know, partly it's insurance, right? Like your insurance bundles your entire obstetrics visit from day one of your OB care to the delivery and the postpartum care. You actually, like, there's one fee that, you know, most clinicians get, and it includes no matter how many visits. And so a lot of times patients practices won't get reimbursed for some of those visits. And so it makes it difficult to really push forward. Insurances don't value those kind of things. And which brings us to an important topic of why we are no longer taking insurance. You know, I started out in private practice 11 years ago in an insurance-based model. I was lucky enough to, you know, really be able to help. My husband helped, you know, me build my practice. And we did great for so long, but it was one obstacle after another after another. So 4 months ago, we dropped that barrier. We dropped insurance as a barrier to it. Because like I said, a lot of things in women's health are just not valid or covered by insurances. And so you either have to see 40 patients a day to be able to keep your doors open, or you have to pivot and say, like, this is not how medicine should be practiced. This is not why we do what we do. We don't do it because we want patients in and out like a mill. We want to get to know our patients. We want to understand our patients. And we want to help be their guides. And so, and it really should be a multidisciplinary approach. And so, Karen, can we talk about how, because you've been with me for a while, so you know how it was when we were taking insurance as well. Let's talk about how that insurance care model was.
I think it's very hectic. You know, I feel like it's hard to really focus and hone in on your patients individually. I feel like you are robbed of time. And that's like, you can't replace time. You need more of it. We all wish we had more time. you know. So I think that our new concierge model gives us more time. And that's what you need to be able to deliver the type of care that you want, both as a clinician and the care that you want to receive as a patient. Like, nobody likes the feeling of being rushed. No matter what you're doing, what avenue, nobody likes to feel rushed. You want to have time. So I value our new structure. And I think that our patients do as well. Yeah, I literally had a patient the other day that she was like, you know what? I'm just going to make an appointment just to talk to you. Like, she valued being able to just sit there and heard and listen to, you know, it makes a big difference. People feel it when they come here. They feel the difference in how our practice is structured. Initially, I feel like some people that don't know us, and the person's like, probably, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
It makes a big difference. It really does for both parties.
Yes.
You know, we both gain a lot.
Yes. And I've said this before on my podcast, but, you know, a lot of the decision came down to not only us wanting to elevate the level of care we provide, right? This isn't about like spa, champagne, like care. This is actual, like, we're honing in on multiple systems and we're trying to be preventative, right? We are a reactionary society. We're reacting to a fall. We're reacting to this. We're reacting to that. And that's not a way to create a good health span. And that's what we're trying to do, and trying to be your partners in a health span. And also, you know, as a clinician, I have to say that, you know, entering perimenopause and losing my mom all within the same year was very much a big struggle. And at some point, you realize how precious time is. And you realize that it's not okay for me to go home after 40, you know, 30 patients or whatever, 5 or 6 new menopausal and sex med patients, and feel very drained and not being able to give anything to my family or to myself, right? At some point, you're like, well, why is my anxiety more? I know it's hormones, but it's also the fact that my stress is a 10 out of 10. And this is not anything that we want for our own health, because remember, as women, if we're not healthy, we can't help anyone else, right? That's the number one thing. We carry the burden of everyone in our life, right? So if we're not healthy, we're not helping anyone else. And so I think it's really important for you to realize that too. And that's why people pivot in their lives so much, right? They pivot because they're like, I got to figure out a better way to live my life. And that was a big moment for me as well when it came down to this big decision. Grace, tell me how you think the practice has changed, because you also have been with us for years and you are in the insurance model and now we're in the concierge model. So tell me what's changed for you as a physical therapist.
Yeah, well, I think not only are patients more invested in their care, but on our side of things, I feel like the outcomes are better at this point, because we're really able to spend the time to talk through conditions and not have to abbreviate our session with people. So my visits used to be about 45 minutes to an hour. Now they're 90 minutes for the first visit. Before, I was only able to, we spend like 30 minutes. If we could, we would spend the whole time talking because there's so many behavioral changes that we need to be done and address, stress management, things like that. And
clenching.
And listening, like you mentioned, it's so therapeutic hearing what someone's going through. That alone, a lot of the time, can make a big difference. So, you know, getting to know a patient takes a while, and we all really care about all of our patients. So being able to have that time to build a connection and really understand what's going on takes time. So before, also, I wasn't able to do treatment. First visit, we'd be talking. I would do an evaluation. And then I'd be like, okay, I'll see you next time. We'll talk about your exercises then. But now I'm able to give home exercises and really have a really thorough assessment. And people are getting better quickly, which is wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's a really important step that we've made in our practice as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the multidisciplinary care that we provide here actually is what I think even sets us apart even more, right? There are times where if you are in a practice and there's a PT in the practice and there's, you know, another clinician, you couldn't see the same person in the same day, right? But sometimes the three of us will come in and, okay, we're going to do an evaluation together. And we're going to see what's going on and we're going to meet you together. And so I think it's made a big difference in the connections we make as well. And also just our full evaluation.
I think that also plays into convenience for people. Yeah. Like, we also understand that sometimes people take off a day of work and, you know, you don't have time to make, you know, two more appointments for other veins, like being able to have your PT appointment and your 9 appointment in the same day can be very convenient for people. You know, this is a day and age when we thrive in convenience.
Right. So Amazon culture, yes, we got to get everything on the same day. So exactly. If we don't have it, then, you know, if it's not delivered to our door, then we might not want to do it.
Yeah.
If we can't get it on a Prime, then.
And I also feel like, so when I see a lot of times I'm seeing patients right after you guys now, which we weren't before, and they are at more ease and comfort versus coming back and being hectic, trying to find parking, all those things. Because they, you know, people usually feel like listened to and heard after your visit. So it's less of a barrier, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Actually, and that's one thing I wanted you to talk about too, is people get really scared about the idea of a pelvic floor therapist. Like, what is it? What, you know, even sometimes when we talk about some of the pelvic floor therapies included in some of our models, many times they're like, wait, I don't think I need that. First mm-hmm. of all, like 99% of people need pelvic floor maintenance, because I can guarantee you, you're holding your bladder too long. You're clenching your jaw because you're anxious about something, or, you know, a number of other things, right? Hormonal changes that are happening in the body. And so people get a little anxious about what does it mean to do internal work, or, you know, what is this? Is it a massage? What is it? I get freaked out by it. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit about what that assessment looks like?
Definitely. Yeah. So I think maybe a misconception or a fear going into pelvic floor PT is that you're going to get when you set an internal exam. So you're going to be exposed, you know, and you're going to have your vagina worked on, but it's, and people get freaked out by the term vaginal massage. And I usually don't use that term because it's kind of, you know, sexual, you know, but it's not that. It's an assessment and it's a treatment. So and we don't always have to do a pelvic exam either, but it's very, I make it as comfortable as possible. You're kind of leaning up so you can see me the whole time, and you're covered in a sheet, and we're talking through everything as we're doing it. Shouldn't be painful. But it's
trauma informed. Yeah.
It's very trauma informed, and it's treated similarly to any other muscle in the body. So we're looking at your strength, your endurance, your coordination, your ability to relax and move the muscles, and can be incredibly informative and also really healing to recognize, oh, I'm having this pain in my back, and when you press this muscle in my vagina, that reproduces the pain. So sometimes you can't really access those things from the outside.
Right. Too. Right. Tell people about what the pelvic floor does and what the muscles are in case they've been living under a rock.
I always ask patients if they know what it is before we start too, because a lot of people don't. But yeah, they're a group of muscles that sit in between your sit bones and your pubic bone and your tailbone, like a little hammock or a bowl. And their function is to help support your organs, to help stabilize your trunk. They help stop pee and poo from coming out, which is really important, and also relax to allow that to come out. They are help with orgasm. Well, they contract your orgasm, and they have like a lymphatic pump, some pump situation where it helps lubricate during sex as well, and helps move fluid from your legs up, out, and out into your urine as well. So those muscles can become tense, which can cause a whole skew of issues, or they can become weak and loosened, can cause things like prolapse. But and the other interesting thing about them is they move a lot when you breathe. I think that's a really important thing, is people don't recognize this. When you breathe, they move out, and when you breathe out, it moves up. And that's not happening for the majority of people that I'm seeing.
Right. Diaphragm had to breathe.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, because we always say, if you're not clenching, you're not paying attention, because
yes,
everything is happening.
It makes sense so much.
I think that it's really important to understand that. Let's talk about the myth of Kegels, though. Like, everyone says you should just do Kegels and that's going to take care of everything.
Totally. I think there's two schools of thought. If you have tension, a lot of pelvic floor PTs are saying don't ever do a Kegel. And there's the thought that a Kegel can help you relax afterwards. So it's a little complicated, but essentially...
We'll tell them what a Kegel is.
A Kegel, yes. A Kegel is a contraction of the pelvic floor. It feels like you're stopping pee from coming out or holding back a fart. It literally closes and lifts the muscles of your vagina or your anus. And, you know, a lot of people are thinking you have to, like, stay tight and really strong in that area, especially after childbirth, or even in order, they think, I need to be strong to push out a baby, but
it's not strong muscles that push out a baby. It's relaxed muscles. So,
In fact, these muscles, when they come too high tone, even though they're high tension, they're actually the weakest, right?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Totally.
So people always think tight equals strong.
But, right.
And so that can actually, even if you start out having, you know, involuntary contraction of the pelvis or during any type of insertion. So when it comes to like Kegels, you know, some people say everyone should do Kegels. Some people say you shouldn't Kegel. What's the truth about Kegels?
I think, well, first of all, a Kegel is a contraction of your pelvic floor. It stops urine and pee from coming out. And it's voluntary, but also can be involuntary in conditions like vaginismus or even orgasms. But to Kegel or not to Kegel, I think for most, generally, a good Kegel is important and valuable for most people as long as you don't have a last, a Kegel in between. There's some studies that show actually doing really a whole bunch of long Kegels under biofeedback actually reduces tension and pelvic floor dysfunction because it fatigues the muscles out, so they're not able to contract as much and clench throughout the day. So I think they're really, you know, valuable for like orgasms and blood flow to the pelvic floor. But for some people that are not able to do Kegel, they do a contraction and then it just stays there and then let's go. And we need to learn how to relax those muscles first and lengthen and trap those muscles before we start doing Kegels.
Yeah, so the Kegels are not the answer to everyone, especially with high tone pelvis, like you said. Right. If we're already clenched up because we're so anxious and the world's on fire, then like,
totally.
Yeah,
I think everyone. A lot of people are saying we need to have a really strong pelvic floor. We need to have a tight pelvic floor, you know, and it's kind of stigmatized a little bit. So, so that's not always the case once people have too much tension. Discussing like childbirth, you know, people they've come to see me before childbirth. Like I am having weakness, or I need to like strengthen my pelvic floor so I didn't push a baby out. And the reality is, like, no, you really need to be able to relax those muscles so that the baby can go through without being restricted through tension.
Absolutely. I think that's why the epidural tends to go up the center. We won't feel the pain and you're not clenching.
Exactly.
You know what? You brought up the orgasm thing, which is really important, I think, because, you know, part of what we do in this office is sexual medicine. I mean, we're looking at sexual pain, we're looking at persistent genital arousal disorder, genital pelvic abnormal pain sensations, loathing at low libido, loathing at arousal, being orgasm, dysfunction. So while this is a big problem in your life, and a lot of people can't reach that. And pelvic floor PT is really an important component of improving that.
Absolutely, yeah. We can talk about things that are happening and helping reach orgasm, but also strengthening that pelvic floor and strengthening muscles around the pelvic floor as well can help achieve that, and managing stress as well is a big part of it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of some of the things that we routinely ask for, screen for, and treat here in this office. I want to go back to Karen and talk a little bit more about some of the stuff that we do in addition. Obviously, we do a lot. We also savvy when it comes to GLP-1, studying them for many years now. You're doing a lot of the aesthetic work, and we talked about the KB aesthetics. Tell us about your, because there's so little available, I think, for women of color.
Yeah.
And, you know, different skin tones. Tell us some of your approaches to a patient when she comes to you.
Yeah, so say I have a patient that is complaining, dealing with, dealing with hyperpigmentation.
Yeah.
So I first ask them, number one, are you wearing sunscreen? And I feel like a lot of women of color don't. Mm-hmm. And that's because we kind of look like a purple ghost sometimes,
yeah.
Depending on, you know, the type of sunscreen that you wear. And I'd like to educate them on, you know, what type of sunscreen is best for someone with hyperpigmentation. And the best type is tinted mineral sunscreen. And that's because the iron oxides in tinted sunscreen not only blocks the UV rays, but it also blocks the visible light. So the light from the sun, the visible light that you see, your phone, your TV screen, all that makes it worse. And most people are not aware that that can improve their pigmentation. And if you're not wearing it, it's never going to get better. You have to protect your skin. And I like to recommend different brands that will work for different, you know, a plethora of different shades. Then I also like to offer treatments like the chemical peels and microneedling to help prove those conditions as well. Like the microneedling can break up the pigment, and then the peels can help to lift the pigment. So those are, like, I would say my top two favorite treatments for people with thicker pigmentation. And then one thing that I think is very important for people to be aware to make sure that your provider is comfortable treating people of color, because when it comes to microneedling, your depth and penetration should not be as deep at a person of color, because you could need to rebound hyperpigmentation and potentially hypopigmentation. Mm. You know, so you want to avoid creating new issues.
Right.
So I think people need to be well aware of their procedure, how they're doing things to prevent any further, you know, complications.
And it's okay to even ask, right?
Yeah.
Like, ask, do you normally treat?
Exactly. It's okay.
You know, South Asians.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, tell me what your experience is with someone looks like me.
Right. Exactly.
Right. And so, you know, I think that most people can be forced talking about that, hopefully. Yeah. But also, you know, I think it's really important because, again, you have to advocate for yourself in this space, right? That's what we always talk about. And one of the main reasons that, again, we change our model of care is because, you know, we have patients that are fully educated. They're coming to us with all of the information, and we have robust discussions about it. And so we really think this is important as well. And so I think that's something that we should always consider when we're seeking out the medical care of cancer. All right. Well, I hope you guys liked seeing sort of our office space and getting the tour and understanding how to get to us. We're going to be doing more of these, so, you know, we're going to get into details, but I wanted to introduce you to our practice, our concierge model of care, so that you have an understanding of why we do what we do and what it looks like for you as a patient. But, you know, I would say that my jokes that my listeners are vigilantes. So if you have one sort of like hot take or vigilante vertical, what would you say? Good.
Oh, goodness, what would I say?
You know, whether or not it's choosing care or, not being in midlife, what else?
Yeah.
I threw them off.
I didn't expect that one.
No. We're totally serious.
All right.
So what would your vigilante vertical be for those types here?
So I would say that self-care is important, no matter whether it is aesthetic or just your basic annual exam that you're doing, or your perimenopause care, your menopause care. Every form of self-care for yourself is important.
Absolutely. What about you, Grace?
Okay, for me, I would say, Hate, come see us.
Yes.
Come see us. We love when you guys.
Take a deep diaphragm.
Yeah, take a deep diaphragmatic breath. Pay attention to your pelvic floor. Pay attention to urinary, bowel, sexual health concerns, and discuss it with your provider. You know, unfortunately, there's stigma and shame when it comes to pelvic, concerns and disconnect. So, you know, hopefully this has been motivating and lifted some shame for some people out there, so we feel more motivated to discuss these concerns with your provider.
Well, thank you guys for being here today, and I hope you guys liked seeing our practice and the GSM Collective, the GYN and Sexual Medicine Collective. I'm Dr. Christina Ramon. Remember, I'm there to educate so you can advocate for yourself. Please like and subscribe to my channel, and see you in a second.
Please subscribe to this podcast. I'd love for you to be a follower and learn as much as you can about the things that we're going to talk about with all the people on our journey. Please review us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. These reviews really help. Review us, comment, tell me what else you want to hear. To get more information, my practice website is www.cgcchicago.com. My website for GynoGirl is www.gynogirltv.com. My Instagram is GynoGirl, so please follow me for some good content. Additionally, I have a YouTube channel, GynoGirl TV, where I love to talk about all these things on YouTube. And please subscribe to my newsletter, GynoGirl News, which will be available on my website. I will see you next time.